Blog Talk Radio.
Distinguishable wins and games over the last 24 to 48 hours. I'm your host, Coach Bill, coming to you from the Big Apple, New York, on this Friday, January 19th, as we continue to settle into the new year 2017 and this 2016-2017 women's basketball season, which I got to tell you just continues to be very stimulating all across the country. Relevant games, relevant teams. There's just a lot of good stuff going on pretty much every night during the week, and last night was no exception, both on the high major level, the mid-major level, and I'm looking forward to another couple of shows today, actually two shows today. This 10 o'clock a.m. show, they have two terrific guests. I'll first be joined by Joanna McNamee, the new head coach at Albany, and they come off a big win last night. They come off a big win last night, so we'll be looking forward to bringing Joanna in and to talk about that and to talk about her team. And then she'll be followed by Brooke Wyckoff, making her second appearance in just about a week's time here on Replay. And Brooke is the assistant coach at Florida State, and they come off a big win at Syracuse last night. At home against Syracuse last night, and they pretty much dominated that game right from the start. But, again, first we're going to look to talk to Joanna McNamee, the head coach at Albany, and she had an important win last night against Binghamton on the road. So with no further delay, let's reach out to the capital of New York and bring in one Joanna McNamee. Joanna, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Joanna, it's an absolute pleasure to have you. I've been hoping to have you on soon, and today worked out great, especially kind of you to come on the morning after a big road win. You guys traveled, you got back late, and for you to be so kind enough to join me here on Replay. So thank you very much.
Oh, thanks for having me. I really look forward to talking to you today.
Well, that's terrific. Very kind of you. But listen, before we, kind of jump into your team and last night's big road win at Binghamton, I have to say, I got to give the audience and make them a little familiar with you, because what a resume and bio you have there, young lady. And I'm gonna, if you bear with me, it's gonna take a full minute to go down the whole thing, but I got to give the audience. Caught up. You are a native of West Virginia. You spent the last 3 years at the University of Pikeville, which is an NAIA school in Kentucky, before coming to Albany, my neck of the woods up here in New York. But last season included, you were 26 wins, NAIA Final Four. You were the 2016 WBCA Regional NAIA Coach of the Year. You were an assistant at the University of Maryland for 4 years, including the year they won the national championship under Brenda Fries. And you were an assistant also at West Virginia. By the way, she was also the recruiting coordinator there as well. The assistant at West Virginia. Boy, I think you were a recruiting coordinator your whole life. I think even in preschool, somebody had you. Because you also was the recruiting coordinator at West Virginia, at Kentucky. Those were your Division I assistant stops, and You attended West Liberty. And how about this, fam? Right. This is where it really gets good. She was a Division II All-American, a four-time first-team All-Conference player at West Liberty, the 1997 Player of the Year in the conference. And, again, I'm just getting started because this lady was, just an unbelievable player. She still holds the NCAA Division II career assist record at 1,107. And this is, like, truly video game stuff. She had 24 assists in a game. And I'm telling you, I had to throw water in my eyes, rub them a couple times to double-check that. Joanna, 24 assists in a game. Now, I'm a New Yorker, so I like to break chops every now and then. Were you guys playing 5-on-2 in that game? I mean, 24 assists for any – Magic Johnson would be drooling at 24 assists in a game.
Right, it was definitely one of those games. I think I only played like 25 minutes in that game too.
You know what? That's just arrogant. That's just an arrogant thing. I was just kidding. But 24 assists in 20. I mean, that's just mind-boggling. But anyway, she's one of only four players in NCAA history to have 1,000 points and 1,000 assists. So I got to tell you, I'm worn out, Joanna. I was worn out reading it, and I'm worn out telling you.
You're making me blush, really.
It's just that it honestly is just an incredible, right? It honestly would be extremely impressive just in assistant coaching and the coaching part alone, and then to get into the player part. I have to know, do your current players, any of them, are they aware of all this, especially the playing part?
I have no idea. Shoot, Coach Bill, that was so many years ago. Looking at me now, I can hardly catch the ball, let alone count my past performances. So, no, we just stick to coaching. And, you know, I think instead of, in lieu of even demonstrating in practices, I try to get one of the younger players or younger assistants to help me out because those were definitely way in the past.
Well, nonetheless, just extremely impressive and deserves respect, especially, I mean, the assist thing, especially a former point guard myself, the assist thing is just mind-boggling, 24 in a game. But anyway, moving forward to this year's team and this year's experience, which I know you'd rather talk more about it at this point. But I have to ask you, we've actually had a recent theme of kind of first-year coaches, and it's not a first-year, you know, head coaching experience for you, but it is your first year now at Albany. And one thing I can relate to in this journey for you is taking over for, you know, a very successful head coach and at a very successful program. And certainly you have a kind of a Division II background as a player, and NINA is very similar. But I recently, in one of my early years coming back from my cancer journey, took over for a terrific local head coach and a guy who's a mentor to me. And the year before I was on his staff, we had went to the Division II National Championship. And he was just a very successful coach. So I kind of knew about, you know, what was on the plate. I can relate to what's on your plate about taking over for a very successful, you know, head coach who had a great run. And Coach, you know, Henderson Katie Abramson is now down in Central Florida. And obviously you're trying to take the baton and continue the success there. But it's always a lot on a plate to take over a new program in itself. You know, to get settled in, to get the, you know, the players, you know, settled in with you and the style of play and all that goes into that. And then you add in a program that's been successful, and certainly everyone expects the success to just keep on keeping on, even though
right.
it's always a new team and you lost players and all those dynamics as well. So I want to ask you, and then you obviously have to include the personal side. You moved, you know, your husband and your kids up to a whole new part of the country and up to Albany. So, I mean, how are you settling in at this point? It's obviously mid-January and you're knee-deep into the season, but, I mean, how would you candidly say you've settled in at this point, both personally and professionally?
Well, you know, personally, we've settled in, and that's probably at times what helps me keep my sanity throughout this early part of the season because we've kind of been so up and down, is that my kids are really happy here. And, you know, that's where I took that big break. I took almost 4 years, you know, 5 years off from coaching, was to get my kids started into school. So my two boys are 11 months apart. They're like the same age for 2 weeks every year, which is crazy. So needless to say, I didn't plan that second little boy so quickly. So when I found out I was pregnant with him and I was coaching at Maryland, I ended up stepping away from coaching for a little while until we got them into, you know, kindergarten and first grade, and then I took the job at Pikeville. But so with that being said, you know, changing my career path for them, their happiness, a lot of times it really does help, you know, dictate my happiness. And
yeah,
moving here, they really love it. Everybody's adjusted really well. We found a house, sold our house, did everything. I mean, everything fell into place so nicely that it just seemed kind of meant to be that I'm in this position, in this job. So that has really helped. Professionally, it's been really exciting. I have at Albany, the administration is out of this world. I mean, just so, so supportive, good people, fun to be around, and, you know, really understand, although the expectations on me and the program are high, they understand that it's going to take, you know, a little bit of time. So that's been really nice that they've had that kind of patience with me. And, you know, I was able to hire a staff of extremely competent, you know, almost over the top, you know, count my lucky stars that I have the coaching staff that I was able to put together, because I think that, you know, at any level that we would be coaching at, we've got an unbelievable staff. Even if we were coaching in the, you know, top 25 schools in the country, you know, it's a great coaching staff. So with all that being said, you know, the wins and losses has been frustrating because, of course, as all coaches, I go into every game, you know, knowing that we're going to win. So I think the losing really just takes a toll on me personally. But, you know, because the wins are kind of, like even last night, it was a great win, but it was almost just a relief. Yes,
yeah.
It's a relief. Like, I'm just like, oh, okay, that's the way it's supposed to be. But after a loss, I question everything that I'm doing, and, you know, it's just such, and I think all good coaches do, and all competitive people do that. So, and I've taken over a team that has, they're very used to winning. So they feel that same hurt after a loss, which is a good thing. But it also makes it tough because they're very, you know, hard to get back after a loss because they expect to win. And we don't have the same personnel that they've had the last few years.
Yep.
So, you know, and it's like I'm coaching, you know, 13 freshmen because everybody's learning a new system. So that's been kind of – but I'm hoping as games keep – you know, we keep getting games under our belt that we just continue to gel.
Yeah, and I want to follow up on a couple of things. One, you know, kudos to your husband, because people never understand, you know, what goes into either being the spouse or the partner of a coach in basketball, and the lifestyle and the demands, and then obviously now, you know, to support your career and this opportunity, you know, the move and everything. And so, again, kudos to him and the amount of support that he has given you, you know, in this process. And then thank God that you said, especially so early in this journey, that your kids are happy, you know, in this new spot. Because as you said, I mean, that's certainly, you know, has a big bearing on your happiness day to day. And, you know, what a huge deal that is for you, because I still can't get over, you know, moms and females in this business, especially wives and moms. I just remember just how, you know, what a grind being a coach can be, you know, with all the demands.
Right.
And then never mind still being a mom, having to go home and still being a mom and, you know, and a wife and all those demands too. I honestly, and I know this is total brown nose stuff in one regard, but I just have so much respect. And I just think you guys are wonder women, you know, that pull this off.
Oh.
You know, that dual responsibility. Because I know even when as a single guy being and a coach, just how much of a demand and a grind it was, and never mind having those responsibilities. So God bless you and all the, you know, and all the female coaches out there that are wives and moms as well. And then you talked about your administration and anybody. Oh, I think only people who've coached and who've won know how imperative it is to have, you know, a supportive administration and one that gets it, and especially if
right.
you're ever going to take over a program, because they have to get it to understand kind of, you know, what your journey is going to be like. And it's just, that's why I think it's always the biggest deal when you search out, you know, new opportunities, new coaching jobs. The administration is huge, because if you have bad administration, the ones that don't get it, it's almost, you know, really, really hard to win. And I remember earlier in my career, around 2000, I was part of a staff that took over at LIU Brooklyn, and they had never won. And we won in that first year, and people all the time say, you know, what was the biggest thing? And I say all the time it was the administration, because they literally allowed us to just coach. They took all the little ancillary things that could get in the way or cause an issue. I mean, they just allowed us to just coach and kind of do our jobs, and it was such a huge deal to the success we had there right away. And again, anyone who coaches knows just how huge it is that your direct boss, your AD, and the administration just be so helpful, so understanding, and all that stuff. So again, it's obviously no coincidence that Albany has had tremendous success for the last few years up there. Certainly Coach Abramson deserves a lot of credit, but the administration's a big deal in that. And then lastly, you know, you mentioned, you know, how tough it is on you. I mean, if you're a competitor, I don't remember sleeping a lot of years. And never mind in my first year experience as a head coach. I mean, all I can just remember is being so drained and tired through that first year, because, as you said, it's just the wins are truly just a relief almost 9 out of 10 times. And then the losses just do. They just absolutely tear the heart out of you. And I don't care what success, confidence, or ego level you had, after every loss you do, you question yourself so much. And it's a tough journey that first year. And no matter what happens for you the rest of the way, I know once this year ends, I'm going to have to reach out to you and give you a little God bless you, because I know about that journey in a first year. But anyway, I want to keep, you know, things moving and certainly talk on this year's team. And the thing about it, too, is, you know, anytime you lose significant players and you're putting in a new system and stuff, like you said, it's just it's almost like having, you know, 12 or 13 new freshmen. And if you can, just for our audience, you know, just give a little insight into the difference with you taking over in terms of, you know, either style of play or system on either side of the ball that, you know, is different for this year's team and these kids.
Well, there's, you know, and just to touch on that whole when you take over a new program, I think what also is different here, that, and it's my first time experiencing it, because even as an assistant coach, all the moves I made, it was going into programs that hadn't been successful, in that we grew into being a successful program. So this is my first experience taking over a program that has had ultra success and, you know, trying to implement my style. And what's different about it is, as soon as the going kind of gets a little rough or tough,
they look back. Kind
of, the returners want to kind of revert right back to what they know or what they've been very successful with.
Yeah.
And that's been kind of tough, because everywhere else I've been, there's been such an instant buy-in and gravitation to what I do, because, you know, everybody's excited for that change.
Yeah.
So I think that's been a little bit taxing this year, but that's where, you know, wins are always a little bit of a cure-all, because then they start to believe a little bit more, like, maybe this way is going to work. You know, some of the different style changes is that, you know, I love man-to-man defense. So, you know, I think it's almost hard to teach any other defense until they have solid quality man-to-man principles. And that's something that, again, taking over a team that had only played a 1-2-2 or a 2-3 matchup zone in the past, that's been a big, you know, it's been a lot of teaching. And we're still a work in progress. Last night we still had to play quite a bit of zone because it's still a work in progress. I'm really big. The system even I played in, where I got all those assists, it was a very fast-paced, point guard-driven system. And so I love that pace. It's a pace that I implemented when I was at Maryland. When I was at West Virginia, I was fortunate enough to work for coaches that allowed me to put in that system. So that's something that we're doing here. But again, sometimes when it gets tight, this team tends to revert a little bit back to, you know, not really with it. And that's something that we're continuing to work and trying to get that cohesiveness. But, you know, at the end of the day, if we can increase our possessions by just killing it on the rebounding end of things, both offensively and defensively, and then making, you know, converting all of those defensive rebounds into an opportunity to get a quick fast break shot or layup, that's my goal. But I think sometimes this team feels like that they're a little rushed in doing that. Like they almost think, you know, it's almost a bad decision. And I'm trying to tell them, hey, you can work for 25 seconds into the shot clock to get that same exact shot. Why not just take it when you first get it? And we'll crash the boards. And we'll, don't worry if you miss, because we'll have offensive rebounding. We're going to get the offensive boards. And, you know, at times they do it, and you can tell they'll have it because it's a very fun style of basketball, in my opinion. But it's also one that you have to be in great condition. And that's one thing I think this team is. They're in really good condition. They work really hard in the weight room, and that's indicative to the system that Coach Katie put in. I think, you know, she really instilled in them the importance of being in great shape and working hard. And so they've got that championship mentality on that front without question. Now it's just a matter of, you know, if you're going to be in great shape, let's go ahead and put that to the test. Let's make these other teams, you know, drag a little bit because our tempo is just so high. So that's what we're, you know, in theory, you know, that's my goal, is what I'd like our tempo and our style to be, but it's still a little bit of a work in progress.
Well, God knows, and God bless you, because I'm such a huge proponent of, you know, up-tempo basketball and playing fast. And, you know, as an offensive coordinator for multiple, you know, programs, and we did that, and it's just, you know, to me, I'm such a big fan of it. I think it's not only, you know, such a dictating and style, but I think it's also stimulating, which women's basketball continues to need more of that as well. So
right.
I'm certainly going to be someone who pats you on the
you
back.
You know, if there's
and
any chance we can get the referees to jump on board with the whole, you know, letting the flow of the game go a little bit, that would be awesome.
But don't get me started on referees. That is not a good topic for me, for sure. But you know, keeping it moving. You know, just quickly to revert back to a little bit of what we were talking about. I certainly want to get more onto last night's game, and that's what we do here at Replay. But you know, you talked about something that, again, has been weird. It's been a consistent theme recently on this show, and I had Shauna Green, the new head coach at Dayton. On recently, a couple of days ago, and we were talking about that very thing. She obviously took over for Jim Jaber, who's, you know, just very successful at Dayton, and she took over late in September, which, again, I can relate to. And I talked about with, for her, you know, they're on about a 7-1, 8-1 stretch, and we talked about that. It's just really about when it becomes your team. And obviously you and I just alluded to, you know, kids looking back, and especially if they've been in a program that's had success, and when do they fully trust? And sometimes it just takes some signature wins. And for her, I felt like they had a couple in conference, you know, that just recently, that I think has kind of has the kids now fully looking forward and saying, yes, okay, you know, we trust this coach, and, you know, we're ready to move forward with this coach without looking back. And I'm not sure for you, and this is where, you know, you can obviously be candid, if that's happened yet, you know. And obviously, you know, anytime you have the wins like last night where you go on the road and it's, you know, kind of a comeback win as it was, or, you know, a close win, I think the wins in conference are the ones that kind of do it, because obviously the program has had such success in conference, and I think it takes the certain wins in conference a lot of times for the kids to finally kind of just say, you know what, enough of looking back and reverting back or whatever. We got to, you know, this is our new coach. This is the one we trust. We're ready to fully move forward. And so I just want to get your quick thought on that, if maybe you haven't even had it yet. And obviously, like you said, you guys have been. If you look at your schedule, it's literally the epitome of up and down. You know, a couple wins here, a couple losses there. You're obviously 9-9 overall, 3-2 in the conference now after last night. And so, you know, just your quick thought on, you know, I think for Shauna at Dayton, it kind of definitely did have, at least looking for the outside, I think she kind of, you know, wound up a green, or at least somewhat. For you, do you feel that maybe you're not even at that point yet? And it seemed like you alluded to that, where they still just, maybe it's not your team yet, just in terms of, you know, the kids fully you know, saying, okay, let's move forward and not look back at all?
You know, we're not quite there yet. I wish we were. I mean, that would, honestly,
amen.
I think that's probably, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, you know, I really, really wanted to be there.
No question.
You know, by the end of our non-conference, that was the goal. We're just not quite there yet. I'm hoping that we can get there as this conference regular season continues. Because that's,
yeah,
of course, you know, as a coach, that's the ultimate goal is, you know, to feel like our, this is all gelling, it's all coming together. But no,
yeah,
we're not quite there yet.
Yeah, and that's the thing,
and,
you know, like I said, as someone who's been in your situation, I can feel when it's there and when it's not, usually from the outside. And like you said, I don't think you're there. And you even kind of, you know, supported that feeling, you know, even a few minutes earlier, which is saying, like, you know, they're kind of still reverting back to, and even, you know, whether it's the style of play and that stuff. But I do think there's the opportunities, you know, pretty much right around the corner here, like even this next game at Maine, you know, I think these road wins and these conference wins, and again, last night being a comeback win, you know, and a close game, I think those really help, because it's, you know, it's kind of the adversity thing, and you work through it together, and you get over the top and you win. And, you know, as a segue, you know, you guys trailed 40-31 at halftime. You had just a miserable start. You know, you certainly, you know, your best player, Amani Tate, had a, you know, a miserable first half in, you know, just an overall scope. She only scored 2 points. She certainly had a terrific second half and was a catalyst to getting
right
over the top and winning. But you guys really had 13 turnovers in the first half, and, you know, they hit 6-3 on the defensive end. They hit 6 threes in the first half. Their star player,
oh, no,
Amani.
I lived it. It was miserable.
Yeah, their star player, Amani Watkins, for, you know, for Binghamton, had, you know, a terrific first half. So, I mean, you look at it, it was just literally one of those halves on both ends of the ball. Offensively, you're turning it over, you know, making poor passes. Your star player hasn't got off. Defensively, in the zone, you know, they're getting the jump shots they want. They're making them. Their star player's getting off. I mean, it was just one of those halves that you're like, oh, my God, you know, are you serious? And so I'm curious,
yes,
to ask you, you know, what was the halftime temperament and kind of discussion and speech with the team?
You know, and that's, again, trying to figure out what makes this team exactly click, and also, you know, what will make them truly buy into to what we're doing. You know, at halftime, you know, that might have been a halftime where if I know I had this team in, you know, in my grasp, that I could go in and maybe go a little bit nuts on them. But, you know, since we're not quite there yet, it was more of a halftime talk about what adjustments we needed to make defensively and offensively. Like I told Amani, our Amani at halftime, I said, you know, I think you're just so wide open. You're not used to it. Because she didn't take a bad shot in the first. She was 1-for-10 in the first half, but did not take a bad shot. All shots that were characteristically knockdown shots for her, She couldn't have been more wide open. I just missed them. And that's what I thought, you know, and I said, you know, but we're, one of our signature traits is that we crash the offensive boards. Well, you know, at the end of the first half, you know, we missed 22 shots and we only had 6 offensive boards. That's not what we do. So we talked a little bit about that. And, you know, we also just talked about offensively continuing to move the ball, don't hold on to it, don't pass up, continue to push tempo. But push tempo and take care of it, because again, 13 halftime turnovers is, and the thing was, is they pressed us a little bit in the first half and we did a great job handling their press.
Oh yeah.
None of those 13 turnovers were forced. They were literally us just fumbling balls or walking or just, you know, throwing that, you know, without a pass and, you know, just,
yeah,
bad, you know, bad basketball. So that was, yep, something that we talked about. And, you know, we end up in the second half only having 7 turnovers, which is still, for me, against a team that wasn't really forcing turnovers, 7 is still 7, you know, probably 3 too many. But it is what it is. But we really picked up at the end of the game. We ended up having 17 offensive boards total. So that was a much, you know, that's definitely where we want to be, rebounding the ball. So I think we made some good adjustments defensively. You know, we talked about going into the game, you know, we're very, and that's, again, tribute to my staff. We've got a great staff. Our team is very well prepared for each game. We know that their team, I feel like, better than the opponent knows themselves. So when we go in, you know, we're talking about, you know, not giving 11, 3, you know, their 10, like not giving their players that can shoot the three, not giving them any wide open opportunities. And here at the end of the first half, the three players we said that we couldn't give any 3-point shots to, you know, ended up taking 13 3-point shots in the first half. How did that happen? Because that's kind of what we talked about and at halftime. But we very calm halftime talk, kind of going over our adjustments and, you know, hoping that we can come out in the second half and play better and be more consistent. So it wasn't like, you know, where, again, maybe in the future when I know I got them and I can truly, you know, motivate them and get into them and it's taken the right way, I can maybe go a little bit more ballistic at halftime. But I didn't.
Yeah. No, I love you. I love your
even though my voice
sounds
like I did.
Well, that's coaching for sure. But I love your candor and your honesty with all that. And you mentioned the unforced turnover. You know, again, being such a distinguishable former point guard, and then I'm also, you know, a former coach. A lot of it too was just, you know, either casual passes or throwing the ball and not delivering it, you know, away from the defense and
right.
That kind of thing. And there's nothing that's more frustrating to a coach than.
And we work on it incessantly. Like, that's something we work on incessantly in practice is, you know, not passing, like, you know, watching the defense, not passing where the defense is, basically, and creating passing lanes for each other. But in practice, you know, we make the same mistakes. So we just got to focus a little bit more practice-wise and clean that up. And it's something that this team does want to clean up. I mean, they are a prideful group, and I really love them. Have a great group of kids individually, and together they work hard. It's just we, basketball-wise, I know as the season progresses, our IQs are all going to pick up. It's just takes time to get that to happen.
Yeah, unfortunately, those coaches obviously we look for that time to speed up a little bit, especially in those regards. But you know, I got to tell you, mentioned, you know, being such a man-to-man coach or whatever, and I know I am as well. Certainly, I'm a proponent of mixing in a zone here and there, especially at a timeout and stuff. But watching a game where both teams were playing primarily zone was tough for me because I'm sitting there, come on,
I know.
You know, so I know, you know, so it was one of those games for sure. But like you said, the thing about it is, here's the theme about that game, and especially on in regards to Albany and your side of things, is that I haven't seen this in a long time, is that they played maybe all but a couple of possessions in the fourth quarter, man, and yet you guys only made 2-3. It certainly wasn't the 3-point shot. You know, that propelled you to victory. You guys had 42 points in the paint, and you're not a 3-point shooting team. And certainly, God knows, Coach, I got to check your recruiting class, but I'm hoping there's one or two snipers in that recruiting class. You guys could certainly use a boost from the perimeter in terms of perimeter shooting, and that's the other end of it too. I mean, any of the success you've had this year certainly has not been buoyed by, you know, by big 3-point shooting. So that's another area that you're kind of having to overcome to some degree, is that you're not a distinguishable 3-point shooting team, which we know in 2017, it seems like it's almost impossible to have success without being able to be good, you know, from behind the arc. But again, to have 42 points in the paint, you know, is a very distinguishable mark in any game, never mind against, you know, primarily all zone. And we talked about, you know, the decrease in the turnover numbers, which was certainly huge, but there's no question your passing overall picked up. You got some more interior look. I thought in the first half, too, the other frustrating thing, besides turnovers that kills coaches and gives them gray hair, was some of the chippies that you made miss
layups,
as well. And so that's enough to drive coaches to drink as well. And one of the, you know, I have to say that Tiana Joe Carter really stepped up and kind of kept you guys
in
the game in the first half, your post player. And, you know, so that was huge. But in the second half, you know, Forster, your sophomore post player kind of came alive a little bit, and she wound up with 11 points. And I got to tell you quick, and I'm actually only going to keep you for a few minutes because I'm going to cut you loose, and I'm trying to get better at not keeping coaches forever because I've been doing a poor job lately keeping coaches for long and this stuff. But I tell you, you know, she's averaging, what, 3 or 4 points a game, and that's a young lady from Long Island that I'm familiar with, and she certainly comes from a basketball family. Her sister had great success up at Albany, you know, previously, but she's got to get it going because she's a better player than what she's been averaging. I know she hasn't played well, especially in the last, you know, the last couple of games leading into last night. So hopefully last night in that second half especially will get her going to some better play because she's a better player, at least from the outside, than the season she's had to this point. And so that was big. But I think your passing overall was certainly a catalyst to that second half run. And you guys the fans got to know this, you know, defensively, they finished 4 for 25 to finish the game. And then the last bucket was, you know, kind of just a three, you know, a throwaway three
right
in the last 25 to 30 seconds, where you guys were kind of just looking not to foul and, you know, let the time go or whatever. But, I mean, so certainly that was quite a run, you know, defensively, and you don't have comeback wins without having those kind of runs. But if you can just quickly speak to, you know, getting Heather Forster going, because to me that's a big deal for you guys. She's, a better talent and a better player than the numbers would suggest. And then also, obviously, that huge run and the points in the paint numbers, because two very distinguishable numbers in a college game. I mean, to hold a team to a 4 for 25 run defensively, and then for you guys to have 42 points in the paint against zone.
Right. I think, you know, that's something that, as a staff, we talked about. We need to have that post presence, like you mentioned, T.J. Carter and Heather both having double digits at the end of the night. We haven't had that in a while, and that's imperative for us because, you know, and that's probably what I think sets what I do apart from most fast-paced styles of offense. Is mine fast-paced, but it still is an inside-outside game.
Yeah,
I want to play fast, but I still want to go inside-out, and you can't do that if your post players on the inside aren't demanding respect and demanding the ball. And although Heather missed some chip shots, which she did, I thought she did such a better job last night putting herself in a position to be available for the ball and putting herself in a pin and steal position to have wide open layups and to be able to get those opportunities. She didn't make them, but again, you know, she's a great kid and, you know, we're going to keep working. And I'm hoping last night was kind of a breakout game for T.J. because she's been in a little bit of a slump. You know, she needed a game where she kind of got a little bit of a spark. And I thought, like you said, she had a great first half. Second half, you know, it was a little bit up and down, but still she did a nice job defensively. And we have some good size. As a matter of fact, the majority of my team is post players. And we have more post players than we do guards on this team. So if I can, you know, get to a point where I can play a couple of those big guys, you know, big kids together, that would be awesome. But we haven't really gotten that yet because, again, they're still learning how to play man-to-man. They're still learning to move in defense, and that's always a process for post players. But I thought defensively they did really lock in. And like I said, I think, again, that's the first game that we're traditionally this year have had very bad fourth quarters as a team. So that was nice to see us really step up in the third and fourth quarter and, you know, play lockdown defense, even though, and we actually did go more to, we toggled between a man and a zone in that fourth quarter, and that I think it helped us quite a bit. But
yeah,
you know, you mentioned too, something I want to plug for our girls is, you know, our team GPA right now is a 3.3, which I think is crazy outstanding. So, you know, that's one, another thing that this group does is they work their butts off in the classroom, which is exciting.
Nice job. It can never be highlighted enough, you know, especially on the women's side, just so many lights-out young ladies that balance academics and, you know, and being a student-athlete, especially with the demands. But, you know, again, you know, people will, you know, obviously Binghamton's not in the top tier, but I agree. It was a very important win you know, last night you came off the home loss, the rare home, you know, loss. It's just rare stuff for an Albany team to lose at home, including this year's team. You know, you're now 7-1 at home and, you know, to UMBC, and that was certainly, you know, just a real tough loss. And, you know, you had to get this road win to move forward, and now you have the main game who's nipping on your heels in the conference standings. And so this has obviously, you know, been a big game stretch. They're all big now moving forward for sure, but a big two-game stretch to get that home win, to get back on track. And now if you can obviously get the road win at Maine, it's not only you know, another big win for you guys, but it's also, you know, a standings kind of thing. And so, again, I think that second half, hopefully, as coaches, we're always hopefully looking for things that propel us moving forward. Hopefully that second half on both ends of the ball will be something that you guys can really build off of and move forward. But, Joanna, can't thank you enough for joining me today again. You had the bus trip back. You got back late to join me again this morning. You know, it's terrific. I've wanted to have you on because again, the Albany program is a good program. It's your first year there. I think it's an interesting spot for sure to have you on. I hope to have you on one or two more times at least, you know, moving forward. And, again, just really enjoyed it and looking forward to following your team moving forward. It's a very intriguing situation right there with you and Albany.
Well, thanks. And I hope, too, that this propels us to, you know, really turn that corner. And I really appreciate you having me on, Coach Bill.
It definitely was a pleasure, and you know, good luck this weekend at Maine. Getting
Thank
back
you.
On the bus and traveling there, and I'll certainly be following and watching. And so, you know, good luck. Keep plugging, Coach. I certainly can relate to that first year journey. It was only a couple of years ago. The leader experience it, you know, with a new team or whatever. But like you said, you have a great staff. You have good kids, and if you guys keep plugging it, it's got to be, you know, coming around the corner soon, where you guys kind of just get going. And I think the, you know, the full trust factor will kind of, you know, step up for you for both sides. So again, good luck.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye, Joanna. All right, fans.
Goodbye.
There is Joanna McNamee, the head coach at Albany. Again, she's in her first year as head coach, you know, taking over for a very successful Katie Abramson, who's now down at Central Florida, you know, like 5 years in a row that they had won, I believe, the America East, and was certainly in the NCAA tournament. And so very successful program that she's, you know, lost certainly some really good players. It's not the same team, not the same program, and she's now, as anybody who has any familiarity with coaching, it's really hard to go in there and implement, you know, the things you're trying to do and to get the kids to totally buy into you in the first year. And so, you know, she certainly, you know, referenced they've been up and down, but hopefully last night's win will be the type of win that can kind of get them moving forward, you know, to gain some more consistency and trust as far as everything they're doing under Coach McNamee. So good luck to her. Thankful to her and her time. But with no further delay, let's go down to Tallahassee, Florida, and bring in, I tell you, one of my new favorite coaches in the coaching profession. That would be Brooke Wyckoff. Brooke, how are you?
I'm great, Coach Bill. How are you?
You literally and figuratively are great. I have to tell you, and I know, again, total brown nose material here or whatever, but sometimes you come across people, especially in the coaching profession, it's not always easy because there's a lot of phonies out there, but sometimes you come across somebody who you absolutely adore on the, right away, and that's got to be you for me, because not
Aww.
Only you're literally like the prom queen type where you just have everything going for you, including like personality and everyone's drawn to you, but you also are just so wonderful in your willingness to continue to come on my show. Again, you have a flight in a couple hours. You had a big win last night, mm-hmm. and yet you were all ready to come on again this morning. So God bless you.
Absolutely. I'm excited, and it's always fun to talk after a win. So, hey, here we are, and thanks for having me back.
Well, no problem. Like I said, thank you. It's refreshing. You always bring an extra little energy. But like I told you last night, I'm absolutely stuck to my promise to only keep you for a short stint. Nothing like last time for sure. and we got to get you, cut you loose and get you to that flight. But certainly we want to touch upon, again, the number, you know, what, 6-7 team in the country, and just a program that clearly is among the league. You had another big game last night, which, again, as I just even said in our last spot, they're all big this time of year, but you had Syracuse come into town with their wild offense and the way they chuck and duck, and certainly that was going to be a unique game plan and a unique matchup to deal with. But, Coach, I got to tell you, right now your kids are like video game team, because not only, you know, with the record they have, but also how they just seem to be following scripts. We talked about a few days ago when you joined me how you guys, you know, after a huge emotional win against Louisville at home, you went to Clemson, and, like, you know, just true professionals, your kids, you know, handled it with maturity and handled that like a true business trip and handled that game like made-to-order style. And then yet now in this game, you guys got off to just an unbelievable start, which, again, is right out of the coaching textbook and is made to order. So, I mean, your kids are like a video game kid team right now. Like, they're taking orders and just throwing it out there on the court.
Oh, it is so fun. It's so funny that you say that, because we always, for years since I've been coaching here, we always talk about, our staff talks about, you know, we love to just play video games, like when we're in our coaches meetings before practice, like, okay, if we do this and she goes here and we do this and we'll be able to do this, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, it's like we love playing video games, and then when you come to reality of the basketball game, it doesn't always quite work out. So I love that analogy you just used, because the girls, it's so much fun to see them play defense like they did last night. And then also offensively, they came out just guns blazing. I mean, we hit some really good shots at the beginning of the game, the first half, and they're just locked in right now. And it's fun. It's fun for everybody to be on the same page and all working together, you know, for this common goal. And right now we've got it. We've got that chemistry and we've got that flow. And so it's just fun to be a part of it.
Oh, amen. I mean, this is just, you know, coaching utopia right now is down there. Aside from Storrs, Connecticut, the next spot might have to – well, there's two other spots, honestly. Mississippi State and Coach Schaefer's got going on this year is one spot.
Gosh.
But Tallahassee, Florida is the other utopia right now. And again, especially when you consider, again, anyone who's ever coached, we're talking kids 18 to 22, and you never know one day to the next. And, you know, you guys are handling it like, you know, like true professionals right now. You're in a stretch where, whether it be on the road or get in a potential trap game or at home against a unique matchup, and what they do at Syracuse, I mean, it's right now, it's just made to order stuff down there in Tallahassee.
Yeah.
But I got to get the fans caught up and kind of some of the numbers. And first of all, you go into a game against a team that anybody familiar with Syracuse knows, you know, they kind of jack up threes and they can come from anywhere at any time.
Mm-hmm.
But they also lead the nation in turnover margin, you know, with their press.
Yes.
They usually take over the ball, but you guys flipped it on them. You turned them over, and then you didn't turn it over. So that was a big, big deal. But here are some of the numbers.
Yeah.
You guys got up to a 14-0 run. Coach Hilsman for Syracuse called a couple timeouts. One was kind of interesting earlier in the first quarter, and then one he was forced to call. But you guys went on a 14-0 run between those timeouts. You started the game 9-for-10 from the field. Amani Wright and Shaquayla Thomas led the charge. Amani was 3-for-3 from the arc. Shaquayla hit 8 straight at one point. But you basically went on an 18-2 run in that first quarter, finished the first quarter 26-7. And I got to tell you, even for the very intense Coach Sue Simrow, she had to be sitting there. I thought I was actually going to see a smile out of Coach, which is rare stuff, you know, in a game. But I didn't exactly get that smile out of Coach. But if there's ever a quarter that you're going to smile, it's that quarter.
I know. Yeah, it was. We at halftime, we were just kind of like, wow, like that was fun, and we were definitely clicking on all cylinders. But we. Credit our girls. They worked so hard the days leading up to this game, just knowing and locking into what Syracuse was going to try to do. And Syracuse, their style of basketball is really effective. And they can the thing about them is they can change a game, you know, they can change the course and the momentum of the game quickly with that press and with the ability to shoot threes and knock down threes. You know, our philosophy is like no lead is safe in the ACC, and especially with a team like this that can just speed you up and then start hitting shots. So our girls really prepared mentally and just locking into the game plan. The way they broke the press in the first half, a lot of sometimes was just amazing to watch. It was so fun to watch them break the press, and a really good press. Now in the second half, they turned us over a little bit more, but yeah, we only had 6 turnovers in the first half. We were so proud of that. And just the credit to those veterans on the team is that coaching utopia comes when you have experienced players. I mean, and it's so fun, you know, to see them lock in and to buy in and then go out and execute and then have fun, you know, and to watch Imani Wright, Kayla Thomas, like you said, offensively just knock down those shots. They are just, they're such ballers. They're just true gamers. But it all comes from, you know, handling that press at first and being confident and poised with that, and then finding a great shot after that in the half court and with less time on the shot clock. And so that's what they were able to do. And yeah, that first half was fun. Now, second half was a little bit of a different story, and we took that as a lesson after the game that you know, in this conference, you can't let down. And we were fortunate enough to have built up enough of a lead in the first half that we still won. But that focus for 40 minutes is huge. And so the girls, I think they understood that after the game, and we'll see how that carries us forward. But yeah, it was fun to really to conquer that style of play. I love what they do at Syracuse. It's something different. It's fast paced, up tempo, which I think we need in this game, in women's basketball. So it was fun to be able to handle it for once. Not like last year. So
Nick,
it was good.
I always try to be candid. The only thing I have an issue with times with them is some of the shot selection, because I'm a shot selection guy. And so at times like they can wrangle me with some of those shots. But I got to tell you, you know, certainly, you know, in talking about them, everything, you know, kind of begins and ends with them, with Alexis Peterson, their stud senior guard, who, you know, is terrific on both ends of the floor. But I know in your last appearance here on the show, we talked about she's coming out of a game where she took 37 shots. And, you know, one of the stories is that you guys only held her to 19 attempts. And she actually, for her especially, in some of her games, it was very efficient. She was 10 for 19 and 3 for 5 from the arc. But I think the underlying story is that she only took 19 shots. So she didn't really, you know, get to truly, you know, put her stamp on the game. And you guys are just, you know, have such a reputation for your overall, you know, defensive acumen and your game plans and what you're, but especially on the perimeter, you guys apply so much pressure. And I think where you guys really stand out, which is so distinguishable in today's basketball, because there's so much pick and roll action in basketball today, and a lot of teams, you know, either just get by or struggle with it, and you guys dictate on pick and roll. I mean, you obviously switch on either some of them or all of them, but you really just do a tremendous job, you know, defending pick and roll. And honestly, you guys dictate. And very few teams dictate on pick and rolls. They kind of, like I said, you know, manage it and kind of play a little bit with every pick and roll action. But if you can see it, that's obviously such a huge deal with Syracuse and with Peterson. So, again, to me, that was kind of one of the real underlying themes in this game, was the perimeter defense and specifically how you guys dictate on pick and roll.
Yeah, thank you. We take a lot of pride in that, in our defense first, and then obviously our ball screen defense. We work on it a lot. We've been working on it for, you know, the last few years, and again with that senior experience that we have, and even our juniors, our post players have just gotten really, really good at those hedges. That does put a lot of pressure on a guard like Alexis Peterson, who has the ball in her hands a lot, has to do a lot off of the pick and roll. It really makes them work. It backs them up towards the half court line. It puts someone bigger on them. So it takes away their vision. And then just makes them have to you know, stress out a little bit more coming off those screens, which is what we want. So I appreciate you recognizing that, and we have worked on it a lot, and we'll continue to work on it. And we've added in switching too as well, and that was effective just to be able to go back and forth between those two options defensively last night, depending on the lineup that we had in. And again, you know, sometimes, you know, our post players will get beat or foul against a smaller guard, but we've found that majority of the time it does take them out of their rhythm and what they're looking for off of the ball screen. And so, yeah, we're excited about it. And it's worked up to this point. So we'll see. We'll keep working on it. But yeah, that's what the feedback we've gotten to is just that that's been the toughest thing for teams to handle. And our, like you said, our perimeter players, they've gotten so good at defending one-on-one. It's hard, especially with the caliber of guards that we have in this league and around the country, to be able to defend one-on-one, close out, stay in front, not foul, not reach. And we've got some great athletes on this team that have locked in and made that an important part of their game. So, yeah, it helps. It helps keep people scorers like Alexis Peterson and Brittany Sykes keep their scoring down, which is what we needed last night.
Well, there's obviously so many great guards out there, especially in the ACC, and if you can control them, especially off pick and roll, it's a huge deal. And I promise I'm only going to keep you another 5 or 10 minutes here max, and then I'll cut you loose. But we've got a couple things you got to get to. Just to follow up on that quickly, and obviously personnel goes a long way, but when you have Ivy Slaughter and Shaquayla Thomas that you can go with, you know, in your front court and there – their athleticism, their ability on the defensive end, and then also their physical presence that allows you them to also control the backboards, even being undersized. You know, certainly that kind of personnel allows you guys to really do some things that maybe other teams can't, and then allows you to switch and not have it being an issue at all, and all those things. But again, people, you know, fans and all the audience can't understand enough just what a big deal that is. To just how successful and good you guys are at dealing with pick and rolls. And then, like, as you, you know, alluded to, and I was going to get to before I let you go, you know, that backcourt is just so rock solid on both ends of the ball. You know, Brittany Brown and Leticia Romero. I mean, you really just can't get any more rock solid, especially in terms of two-way guards than those two. And it's also included in the physical and mental toughness. Just absolutely adore those two young ladies for sure. But I got to ask you kind of a hardcore question. And again, being a coach, and I'm one of those types that's a true junkie about details within execution and everything. And certainly you guys are. I mean, you guys are one of the elite defensive pros. But I noticed something that I'm curious to ask you in terms of philosophy, in terms of your hand action, especially on the perimeter. Now, I'm watching you guys, and obviously, you know, you're in stance and you're so locked in, but I noticed that consistently you guys' hands are down by your knees when you guys guard. And I know, like, say, for instance, a UConn has the philosophy of, you know, high, they actually go two high hands and a lot of things. So I want to get, and again, this is more an inquiry thing, not a criticism, because with how good you guys are, the last thing I'm going to, you know, do is criticize Florida State with anything they do on that end of the ball. But I'm curious, what's kind of the philosophy as far, because I'm a big hands guy as far as, you know, being active and playing with hands and not having them down by the knees. Yeah. So I'm curious to ask you, Coach, what's the whole premise and philosophy with that?
Well, it's nothing that we've coached them to do. I will tell you that. We like hands up as well. And we got burned, I think, a couple times last night with hands, you know, hands down, man down, you know, and especially on someone like Alexis Peterson. And we have stressed that. I will tell you what, and this isn't something we've actually discussed, but I think what it comes from is we have stressed this year, and like I was talking about, their ability to stay in front and to guard one-on-one without getting blown by, which is what we call, you know, just. And so I think it comes from that, where the girls are more, you know, those perimeter defenders are more focused on using their feet and staying in front than they are taking away that vision. And it ideally, you would love them to be able to do all of it, you know, hands up,
yeah,
in a stance, stay in front, slide. But I think with the game slippage, that's where it comes, you know, where they don't have their hands up as much as they should, but they're staying in front more than they have been in the past. So it's kind of like, you know, picking our poison, which we did. We were screaming that at times during the game yesterday, like, hands up, get your hands up. So we do want that to be a focus, but honestly, it's also, we like that their feet are ready. They're ready to stay in front and to not just open up and get blown by. So I'm totally with you. I'm a hands up person. And defensively, our staff is too. But that game slippage, that's one thing that's come, that, you know, we did get burned on a little bit yesterday, and the girls were like, hands up. They're like, I know. So we got to keep focusing on that as well. And the ability to do that and keep your feet moving and stay in front is just, you know, it's rare. To do it consistently, but we will keep working on it. But thank you for pointing that out. You're absolutely right. I love that detail.
It's one of those things where I had to smack my own hand about even asking, because again, Florida State defensively, come on. But I love that you asked.
It's good.
Again, that's hopefully what people get with this show. You know, I'm a junkie, and you're so great to, you know, to throw anything at. So I definitely wanted to. And on the flip side, you know, in an area of detail that you guys deserve just tremendous, you know, kudos and plaudits for, is how you guys trust and rely on defending with your chest, especially in and around the lane. And nobody does it better than Shaquayla Thomas with her quick slides and, you know, and bodies up that she gets so many, you know, charges and stuff. And God bless you, because, you know, women's basketball especially needs to, you know, to follow your guys' lead. Especially with what referees will call, you have to be able to trust and defend with your chest around the lane and get your hands and arms out of there. And you guys, honestly, are as good as it gets, especially led by Thomas in that respect and that detail. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. And, you know, actually, Ivy Slaughter, she hasn't taken as many charges this year, but, I mean, the last 2 years, she has taken an unbelievable amount of charges. And Shaquayla has learned from her. It's unbelievable. I mean, just that Shaquayla wants to do that. And it's nothing that we don't do drills where we teach them how to take charges necessarily. We stress the importance of, if you're going to slide over to help, you better take a charge and not let them go by you too. You know, if someone's driving, and we do stress the importance of that, but Ivy Slaughter has been so amazing and just inspiring the rest of our team to take those charges. And so Shaquayla has really, I actually turned to Ivy on the bench when Shaquayla took one last night in the second half. I was just like, Ivy, how cool is that, that, you know, Shaquayla learned from you. I mean, literally watched Ivy do it umpteen million times and figured out how to do it and thought that was something cool to do, you know, and especially a player like Shaquayla, who is so dominant offensively. You know, it's easy for a player like that, I think, sometimes to be like, defense, you know, okay, or rebound, you know, and she really is buying into and getting excited about wanting to take charges, and it's helped us this year. So, yeah, I mean, their ability and their desire to want to do that is really special, and it's nothing that we as coaches can take credit for, other than telling them, like, you know, just telling them how much we value that, and they get into that, which I'm so thankful for. And they're so athletic that back to talking about Gino Auriemma, like we did last, but, you know, he said that a player that fouls a lot, it is an immature player. You know, it's a sign of immaturity. And I was a big hacker in when I played, and it is. But I totally agree with him that when you really mature as a basketball player, mentally and just skill-wise on the defensive end. You learn how to play smart. You learn how to play without fouling and still be effective and physical, you know. And so that's where I'm so proud of those two post players, especially Ivy and Shaquayla, which is they're growing up and they're understanding how to use their bodies and to be a great defensive player without fouling. Now, they still foul and they still do stupid things at times, but in that respect, they've both grown, and Shaquayla especially. So, yeah, we can be more happy for them and how they're doing that and playing.
I got to tell you, one of the things I love about this show and having you coaches on is getting some little insight in terms of, you know, what's said on the bench, what's said in the locker room, those kind of things. So kind of cool to get that little – that you had that conversation with her during the game. You know, you mentioned quickly – you know, what Gino said in regards to the immaturity in terms of how, you know, and fouling. And I got to tell you, and you certainly obviously know that as a coach, it's one thing to have recognition. It's another thing how you transfer messages. And he's so unbelievable. And that's such a great way to, you know, to put it and to look at it. And I think when you transfer it to players that way, which he obviously is as good as it gets in doing those things, I think that it's a big deal because then they look at it that way and they'll take more pride because they certainly don't want to be viewed as being an immature player. So, again, another great job by Gino in transferring, you know, recognition to a terrific message. And I'm sure, you know, a ton of any coaches who saw that quote or saw that clip, you know, certainly use that moving forward with their players as far as how they transfer that message. But, you know, before I cut you loose, I have to – two things. One, I have to, one as a New Yorker, just break your chops a little bit. But, you know, you talk about being on the bench. I tell you, you're already a striking individual. But that dress you had on yesterday with that color scheme and that little pattern there, I think that might have contributed to some of Syracuse's turnovers. Or geez, that's a little distracting over there. On
you are hilarious. Oh, my gosh.
Was that your plan, bro?
I'm sorry, I'm laughing.
You're sneaky. You're very
What's
sneaky.
Was that my plan? This is my thing, and people like, I really appreciate it's becoming more and more of a thing of female coaches and male coaches dressing so snazzy on the sideline. I think anything that can attract attention to our game, that can make brand our game and make it as high level and as fun to watch as possible, I think it's good. So I try to do my part with that and wear you know, and heck, I don't get out of the office or gym very much. So, you know, when there's a game, it's like, hey, I can put on something normal.
Yeah.
And it's nice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I cannot compete with Mr. Quentin Hillsman with his style. I mean, he's the ultimate. No, I was trying, but no one can. He is the ultimate fashionista of women's basketball. So I love it.
Yeah,
I love what he does on the sideline.
He's Johnny Cufflinks. He's all about his cufflinks and the whole nine. But I got to tell you, Brooke, you bring up a really quick good point. And what Jeff Walz has done at Louisville, you know, you can't say enough about the coach he is, what he's done with that. But one of the things he's killed women basketball and women's basketball specifically is he started the trend of not even, you know, wearing a tie, not wearing a suit. He just throws on you know, the shirt. And now you get more and more coaches that are following that. And I'm with you. I still think, you know, and again, I'm actually going to be serious here for a minute. I still think it's an important and a big deal that coaches do dress up and still kind of, you know, take on that responsibility. And I'm glad you kind of said that. Obviously, it was a joking theme, but I think there is something to that. So, if you continue to lead the charge, you know, dressing very distinguishably, God bless you for that. But
thank you. I'm just following suit of Notre Dame and everybody else. I mean, it's important. And it's important.
I agree. And lastly, before I cut you loose, Leticia Romero, I have to bring her up before I let you go because this young lady, again, you know, obviously recruiting such a big deal, but when you can get transfers like this young lady, what a significant, you know, transaction that wound up being in Florida State women's basketball because, and then, you know, just what she has meant to the, your program as, you know, the leader on the court at the point guard position, which is obviously just a huge spot on the floor and how it affects everybody else and being an extension of the coach. But what this young lady is doing this year especially, like I just noticed looking at the stats in the last 24, she's now tied with Shaquayla Thomas for the lead in scoring at 13.8. And to go with, you know, all the, you know, the assist and facilitating responsibilities, she's also the leading she's the leading 3-point percentage player in the ACC and just an elite free throw shooter as well at 93%. And I mean, you just you can't say enough about. And I you know, I just said it earlier that her and Brittany Brown were rock stars. I mean, this young lady is just an incredibly under the radar. And here's my thing before I let you go. There really, and it needs to start from your SID department, there needs to be a campaign for this young lady because she's not talked about enough in terms of the best point guards in the country. And, man, does she belong there and belong in that conversation anytime it's had because she is just really, as, again, rock solid. Rock solid from a coach is a big-time compliment, but it doesn't pay her enough homage because she is really, really impressive player.
She is. We're so happy to have Letty here. She, she's truly elite. You know, she was an Olympian. She was on the Spanish national team in Rio, and they won the silver. She has played at the highest levels and all over the world. And so you really see, again, a mature player that knows who she is on the floor, that doesn't get rattled. We call her Steady Letty. She just, you know, when she has everybody, all these Syracuse, you know, athletes coming after her and trying to tip the ball and, you know, their pressure and everything last night. I mean, she just, she doesn't get rattled. And then she just goes down and can score, facilitate, pass. And even defend, that's the other thing that she's grown so much and taken responsibility for is being a great defender. And she's not the most athletic kid on the floor. But she, again, knows herself and knows, has figured it out on the defensive end. And so, yeah, we can't say enough about her. She's certainly going to have an amazing career as a professional once she leaves here. And we'll be sad to see her go. But just so thankful for what she's brought leadership-wise and just her play on the floor. And again, she's just locked in and mature and knows what she knows who she is and is about the team as well. So, yeah, I hope that she gets the recognition she deserves this year. But, you know, her goal personally is to get us to the Final Four. I mean, that's what it's been since she's gotten here. And I think any individual accolade that she could win would be, you know, much overshadowed by, you know, she would much prefer to have our team get to the Final Four, and because she knows she'll go on to have a great professional career after this. So she is has been a delight, and she's hilarious, and she's from the Canary Islands in Spain, where it's just island living, you know. So I think it just helps her be, you know, calm, cool, collected on the floor. Nothing gets to her. And yeah, Steady Letty, we love having her. She's playing great. I mean, she's so fun to watch. So
I think that's my.
We love
it. I think the Canary Islands of Spain might be where you got that dress, by the way. That might be But lastly, you know, again, like I said, I I'm putting the onus now on your SID department. We got to get a campaign started for this young lady, especially now that some of her offensive numbers, you know, now have spiked up too or whatever. Again, she really deserves. And honestly, your program deserves. As I said, again, not in a brown nose thing, just honesty in your first appearance. This program needs more publicity because it's. It's really a special one now, both on the court and just overall. But anyway, Brooke, I got to cut you loose. I kept you a few minutes longer than I had planned, so I'm going to try and at least be a lot better this time. And thank you so much once again, not only you know, for the time, the investment. You got to catch a flight, but you truly are lights out in these spots. I look forward to them truly.
Thank you, Coach Bill. It was so much fun being back on again so quickly. I really appreciate it. And anytime you want to chat, let me know. It's been a pleasure and an honor. So thanks again.
Well, never be afraid to say no when you need to, but I certainly will keep reaching out. And again, please have a safe flight to where you're heading.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Good luck on what is it, Sunday now. You have another
Sunday.
Big matchup. Yeah, yes. Again, you guys are on the road, but right back on the road at Virginia Tech, who's reeling a little bit.
Yeah.
Friends with Kenny Brooks, they've had a couple losses, so certainly they'll be chomping at the bit at home to get back on track and take you guys out.
Yes.
So, again, there's certainly no let-up in the ACC, but, again, the way your team is so mature lately, I have a lot of confidence that they'll go in there with the right mindset. So, again, safe flight and good luck on Sunday, Brooks.
Thank you. Thank you, Coach Bill. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. All right,
okay,
fans.
Bye-bye.
There is Brooke White. Bye-bye. There is Brooke Wyckoff, the assistant coach, recruiting coordinator, defensive lead specialist at Florida State. And again, I know I sound like I'm probably a cousin of hers, but this doesn't get any better than Brooke Wyckoff. Again, just an extreme, one of the emerging stars in the women's basketball coaching profession, extremely, extremely again, she's a striking, beautiful woman, but you have no idea how competent she is as a professional, as a recruiter, in terms of her responsibilities as the post coach, as a lead defensive coach there with their game plans and stuff. I mean, she's extremely confident. If you've listened to her either in the previous time she came on or this one, I mean, her personality, so intelligent, so well-spoken. It's an effective personality. She's got it all, and she's just wonderful. It's hard not to adore Brooke Wyckoff. You get any exposure to her, and we're thankful, again, that she's so unselfish and supportive of coming on, shows like this at any opportunity. She does it, and she does it without, a blink and with great energy. So God bless her. And, again, as I just, finished her spot by saying, she not only individually deserves, tremendous promotion because she's special, but that Florida State program under Sue Semrau deserves a ton more publicity, just overall. I mean, they are truly an elite program, not only in terms of records and accomplishments, but their product. Everyone talks about their defense. Their offense now is catching up, and just the overall culture of the program. And Sue Semrau, can't say enough of what she's done building that program and now creating, truly an elite program. And, again, they play in a conference where there is just no let up, and it's a gauntlet. And they just, especially this year following that team, they have just been very mature and very impressive how they have handled, especially in this recent stretch. So, again, she's a great spot to have in to represent the program and representing herself. And what a great ambassador for women's basketball she is and role model for young ladies as well. So thankful to Joanna McNamee for joining me earlier, the head coach from Albany, first year head coach at Albany taking over there, a terrific mid-major program that has been. And, she was a great spot, wonderful lady she is, and gave some great honesty and insight. Especially within about her first year and the journey and trying to get her team, going under her tutelage. So she was great. And then obviously Brooke is always lights out. So thankful to Brooke Wyckoff from Florida State. So there you go, fans. First show for today. I have two shows today coming back in about only 40 minutes or so. Going to have my guy Brett McCormick joining me. We're going to recap some games from last night. And then about at 12:30 Eastern time, we'll be joined by another one of my real favorites in the coaching profession, Terry Williams Flournoy, the head coach at Auburn. Huge win for them last night at home. They pretty much dominated Tennessee, who came off a huge win against Notre Dame. But Terry Williams, Flournoy, and Auburn having a signature win against Tennessee last night. And she's been on multiple times, and she's another one with a great personality. So look forward to that spot about 12:30 Eastern time on my second show. So, again, signing off for this first show today, Friday, January 19th, after having guest Joanna McNamee, head coach at Albany, and Brooke Wyckoff, the assistant at Florida State, coming back at noon Eastern time, a little while from now. to have a second show to recap last night and to talk about Auburn's win over Tennessee. Thank you, everybody. Bill signing off. First show today, Friday, January 19th.